Welcome to Palms and Paws, the podcast. I am your host, Dr. Kevin McEvely, joined as always by Greta Rose. Greta Rose, how you doing? How's your
You
summer treating
introduce me
you?
the same every single time. It's hilarious.
Hey, we got to keep it consistent.
I know. And I always feel like I should have something interesting to say, like, how are you? I'm obsessed with palms and paws. I'm
Palms
good.
and Paws state of mind.
We are growing this community by leaps and bounds, left, right, and sideways. And so I want to start by saying, if you know a person who loves dogs and cats as much as you do, do them a favor and share this.
You know, it's summertime, and this is a time where many people are traveling. Many people are doing outdoor activities with their pets. It's also a time characterized by, big changes in climate. And so we're going to do a
Sure.
series. Greta Rose, what's the series called here?
Cool or not cool? I feel like I'm gonna stick in some music there. Bow, bow. Cool or not cool?
That is the question, whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the heat and humidity of August and September, or to take arms seeking ice cubes. And yeah, I lost the thread there, but you
Ooh,
get
that
the
was
point.
impressive. We are going to jump into this. This is a rapid fire. I hope you had your coffee or whatever you need to get ready for this. Now, just so everyone knows, Dr. Kevin has no idea what I'm going to ask him. I've grouped them into obvious categories. The first one is planning for your adventure outside. You ready?
Yes, hit me.
Cool or not cool? Checking the weather before heading out.
Cool. Love it. I think it's really important, especially for animals that are a little bit more sensitive to temperature. The older, skinny animals that are going to have less reserves for warmth when it's really cold out, that's when we want to be really mindful. And similarly, for big, furry, fluffy dogs that are going out into 75, 80 degree weather, they're going to need more opportunities to cool off and pant to allow themselves to cool down. And most importantly, for the smushy faced breeds, we call them brachycephalic breeds, French bulldogs, English bulldogs, pugs, Boston terriers. These are the breeds that are going to be the most susceptible to heat stress and heat stroke. It's extremely important to check the weather before you leave the house.
Cool or not cool? Hot pavement.
Matters. So hot pavement. I guess I misunderstood the rules here. Hot pavement is not cool. Okay. We put out an article about this, but there's famously the 7 second rule where you put the back of your hand or the flat of your wrist to the pavement. And if you can tolerate it comfortably for 7 seconds, then that should be more than comfortable for your pet. Use discretion and a little bit of logic with that too. But yes, by and large, the 7 second rule will help to keep your pet's paws protected from thermal injury. We've had a couple cases just in the last week where animals are coming in with burns on their paw pads
Oh.
from running on hot asphalt. And
Ouch.
people just really didn't think about it. But they're new to LA and they were taking their dog for a run, and the dog was happy as a clam running up and down Ocean Avenue. But later that night, they were licking their paws. They were having trouble walking. And so it was a case where we ended up, cleaning the wounds, bandaging them, and, applying some SSD, a silver sulfadiazine, to help with the healing process.
So I've been there. So every one of us, we love our dogs so much, and maybe sometimes we're just not paying attention. But that brings me to my next one. Asphalt versus concrete versus artificial turf versus dirt versus grass, navigating the terrain before you. What's cool, what's not cool?
Yeah, great question. So, asphalt is going to absorb heat and cause the most thermal injury or damage potentially. Next in line would be concrete. Turf, depending on the turf and the substrates that they use, can actually get very hot as well. And so, and then I've seen turf, depending on the turf and substrate, can just cause damage or injury to the paws or weight-bearing surfaces. If they're like using their elbows a lot, heavier dogs. We've got patients that are Great Danes, and they've got some lesions on their weight-bearing surfaces from AstroTurf and other turf-like products. Dirt and trails, it depends. I think dirt and grass is going to be the kindest to their paws, but everybody's felt that searing pain of, hot sand at the beach, and that can also get so hot that it causes pain or injury. So the 7 second rule applies to all. I think grass is going to be the safest bet out there, but if it's too hot for the flat of your wrist or the back of your hands, it's probably too hot for your pet's little paws.
That's my next one, beach sand.
Not cool. Beach sand, that's something that can burn your feet, burn you. And so, test the sand before they land.
Don't need more music. Okay, so booties, little boots.
I think boots are super cool, especially here in California and other places where there are foxtails, grassons, or little things that like to plant material that'll burrow between the toes and create wounds and abscesses. If you're hiking a lot with your dogs, there are booties that are basically like a combination between rubber and silicone, and you fold it over the paw, and it protects them from getting injured. Not only will it protect them from plant foreign material, but it'll also protect against temperature surges, thorny material. So I think booties are great as long as they're well tolerated. If your dog cannot walk in them or is stomping at their feet, we've gotten some submissions of videos of dogs walking with boots on for the first time,
So
and
funny.
they're high stepping
Yeah.
and really, trying to figure it out. When we tried this with my border collie many years ago, the only thing that really helped was actually putting the boots on and then getting a toy and starting to play with him. It took his focus or drew his focus away from it immediately. So if you are going to try booties, I recommend putting them on and then immediately starting a walk or an activity so that we can take their attention away from it. And if they get used to having boots on, and that boots going on means that they're about to do something really fun, like go for a hike, go for a nice long walk, go to the beach. These are all ways that we can positively enforce and enrich that stimulus.
Okay, cooling mats or cooling vests? Hype, gimmick, real, cool, not cool.
The cooling vests or cooling mats are not going to be the most helpful at allowing your dog to cool down. In fact, they could actually be detrimental. Dogs in particular, they are going to pant to cool themselves down. It is going to lead to evaporative cooling as they're panting, they're offloading heat, and then the moistened airways are going to allow that fluid to evaporate, which is also going to cool them down. And then there's also heat exchange from their body. They're going to be releasing heat. The best way that they do that is by laying on cooler surfaces. We don't want it to be ice cold. Ice, some people will douse their dogs in ice water, for example, and that's actually detrimental. What that does is it causes vasoconstriction, and that vasoconstriction is actually going to make it more difficult for the body to release heat. So we want the vessels to be dilated so that there's more surface area so that they can actually release the heat the body's trying to offload.
Okay, so that leads us right into next little topic of water. Ready?
Yes.
Communal water bowls.
Not
Amy.
cool. Oh my gosh. Communal water bowls. If I see those on the street and I'm walking a dog, I will cross the street. That is every dog in town dunking their muzzle into it, whether they're healthy, they're sick. It is a breeding opportunity for viruses, bacteria, even parasites that we do not want affecting our dogs. So that is not cool. And I know people are doing it with the best intentions. Every like bakery and real estate office in this town puts those outside on a hot summer day,
I
and
know.
it
They're
is
trying to be nice. They're
yeah.
thinking they're being really sweet and kind. Yep.
Yep. Bring your own water, folks.
I've got some things here that I don't know the answer to. I'm very excited to hear your response. So, rivers or streams?
Cool, fun. But
I wish people could see your face when I ask you one where you're like, oh, I mean, that sounds good to
well,
me.
you know, I mean, it's there are variables that are important to consider. You know, it's just like letting a child play in a river. You're not going to do it with, you know, grade five rapids.
Well, you're talking about playing. I'm talking about drinking. Drinking.
Drinking. Okay.
Drinking
From the
river,
top.
water. Yeah, playing, playing, playing. But like a lot of people are like, oh, you know, I don't need to bring extra water. The river is right there.
The first thing I think of is Giardia. When I hear that, Giardia, a very common parasite that we'll see in water that's contaminated with feces. And that's going to be pretty common in little eddies of water. So, like the still portions of streams and rivers where dogs are more likely to drink from. And then ponds, of course. You know, I would say bring your own water, you know, out of an abundance of safety. There's the old adage that running water should be safe, but most of the trails that are going to be more populated are going to be the same trails that wildlife really enjoy walking on because it's easier for them. And so they're more likely to use those areas to drink water themselves and then also eliminate close by. And so I would recommend bringing your own water and trying to discourage them from drinking from the natural waters out there.
And probably, I mean, if you're bringing water for yourself, you're like, okay, I just need a little extra for my dog. Okay, ocean water, not playing
Boom.
in. We're talking about drinking.
Not cool. Not cool. We do not want them drinking ocean water. Yes, it is. It carries the same potential risks of some parasites and bacteria, but more of the concern is it's got a lot of salt in it. And if they consume enough salt, whether it's in ocean water or any other vessel, that can actually make them very sick. It can lead to a hypernatremia or an elevated sodium level in the blood, and that can actually be extremely life-threatening. We've had animals that come straight in from the ocean after playing all day, consuming large amounts of ocean water, and in some cases, it's something that requires intense hospitalization because there's a pretty complicated relationship between sodium and our brains are. And the rest of our body, when that harmony is disrupted, it can be really dangerous. So, try to discourage it. A couple laps or licks of water from the ocean is not going to be dangerous. But if they consume large volumes over the course of an afternoon or several hours, that's where we can get into trouble. So, again, try to discourage that. Bring your own water.
I mean, we're talking about everything that can go wrong. Obviously, it's a beautiful day. It's summer. The days are long. You want to play with your dog or cat, you know, outside and have fun. So, how do we know? I mean, this is me taking a little sidebar. How do we know what to look for when maybe we've crossed over that line? Because, I mean, we want to take our dogs to the beach. We want to take our dogs to the river and play. That's kind of the point.
So the question is, how do we know when we've pushed too far?
Yeah. Or how do we kind of know when we're getting to the point where we are about to go too far because we don't want to cross the line?
Those are two really important questions. I think the first thing that I'll address is it's important to know your pet's limits. So the most frequent cases where we get into trouble, it's animals that live a pretty sedentary life. And then suddenly they go on a big strenuous hike, and the owner is not observing or appreciating the warning signs. You know, we want to give animals not only a ramp up time, just like a person, we want to make sure that they're at a level of fitness where we know what they can tolerate. You know, so for the animals that are really sedentary, a hot summer day is not the time to take them for their first big long hike. So that's number one. Know your pet's limits or know what they're capable of. You know, if they are panting to the point where they're slowing down on their walk, their front legs are staggered, or they're just collapsing in the shade wherever they can to try and rest, that tells me we've pushed too far. And that's where we want to give them a nice long break and allow them to kind of get to a normal baseline before we continue. Offer them a little bit of water, allow them to rest. And if at any point an animal is starting to struggle to breathe, their eyes are widened, they're really kind of spreading out their front legs in order to get as much air in as possible as they're panting. Or if we're seeing changes in the color of their gums, the gums should be nice and pink. And if they start to turn blue or they become really injected and dark red, those are concerns. And that's where I would say let's get them not only to a safer and more climate controlled place, but that's where you should think about, especially if the gum color is changing, you need to get a veterinarian assessing them immediately. You know, heat stroke is characterized by inability for an animal to cool themselves through their natural mechanisms, and their internal body temperature begins to rise. And as it rises, especially when it does so rapidly and they're unable to cool themselves, it can be extremely dangerous and life-threatening.
I'm always representing, pet parents, and knowing that I myself have maybe pushed it a little bit too hard with my dog.
Yeah, and that's part of building a relationship with your pet, you know,
Yeah.
and like all their funny little mannerisms, things that they like, things that they don't like all the funny little things are just as important as knowing what they're capable of physically. It is so popular for there to be hiking groups and dog walking groups here in Los Angeles. And you know, most of the responsible dog walkers will group animals based on their fitness level
That's cool.
and their breeds too, which is so important. I love when I hear that. A friend of mine out in Texas said, "Kev, I just got a dog. You know, I really wanted a companion that I could, you know, do a lot of activities with. And I'm just so excited." And I said, "Oh my gosh, what'd you get?" And he said, "I got an English bulldog." And I said, "Well, your activities better involve watching a lot of movies on the couch." And I had to explain to them that they're higher risk for heat stroke and thermal injury. So, yeah, it's important when you're considering getting a dog too, your lifestyle and the activities that you want to be engaged in, knowing what the potential limitations and risks are.
We are touching on so many things, like I'm a runner, and wanted to be able to run with my dog, and I chose a breed that had knee issues, and that's just the reality is, like, that was not going to be a fit, and just accepting that. So I got a couple more here around water that I want to hit on before I move to the next topic. Pools, chlorinated swimming pools that you have in your backyard, is it okay for the dog to swim in it and obviously drink?
Swimming, yes. So I'll say cool. Cool with a contingency. So it is cool to have them swim and play in a pool. For chlorinated pools, I recommend rinsing them off after, just so that chlorine isn't sitting on their skin. It can cause some irritation, particularly at higher concentrations. Same deal in terms of ingesting the water. You don't want your kids doing it. You don't want your dogs doing it either. And if it's a tiny amount, it's probably fine. But it's a behavior that we want to discourage. Make sure that there's fresh water available to them. But yeah, a dog running around the pool having a blast, they're probably going to have a couple licks and it's okay.
So we're going to go even more rapid because I know you have a surgery that you have to run into. Kiddie pools in the backyard.
Cool.
Cool. Ice cubes in your dog's or cat's water.
Cool.
Frozen toys. Like some people, like they take a dog toy or a cat toy, they stick it in the freezer to like have it be nice and cold.
Super cool. I love it. So it's not because it's gonna cool them off and it's gonna be, you know, like this groundbreaking therapy to cool them on a hot summer day, but it's behavioral enrichment. When you freeze a toy like that, it actually takes a lot longer for them to get all of the treats out or get all of the food out of that little toy. I mean, Kongs are notorious for this. People will pack food in there and then pop it in the freezer. These are really simple things we can do to occupy our pets and give them an activity that's going to stimulate their brains.
Cool. Sensitive topic. Leaving your dog in a car with the windows open, cracked.
Don't like it. Not cool. So, if it's in a parking structure and it's nice and cool, it's regulated, there's ambient airflow, that is acceptable. On a hot summer day, it can get so hot, especially if your dog is panting in your car and there's no AC running. That is a recipe for disaster, and it makes me anxious just thinking about it. There are Teslas and Rivians and newer cars where they've got dog mode. It'll have the AC running and keeping your pet nice and cool. That's beautiful and totally fine. I've seen some people lock their car while it's on, while their pet's in there, to allow the AC to keep running for them. That's okay too.
Okay, shaving a long-haired dog.
I think it's cool. Everybody loves a summer cut. Certain breeds like Border Collies, long-haired German Shepherds, they actually, if you shave them down all the way, their fur will never grow out the same. You know, they've got layers to their coat, you know, it'll grow out kind of frizzy thereafter. So certain breeds I wouldn't recommend that for, because that'll actually impact their ability to thermoregulate. But yeah, every doodle in Los Angeles has a summer cut right now, and it's a really easy way to keep them not only a little bit cleaner when they're in and out of pools and going on hikes, but it's also a way to help keep them a little cooler.
So you talked about dogs panting. Cats, do they pant the same? How do they stay cool?
So cats are not going to be panting to cool themselves. They will increase their respiratory rates. Cats are much better at resting when they need to rest. If you throw a toy for a cat and they are tired, they will generally lay down and say, "I've had enough." Panting in a cat's actually something that often indicates an emergency. There are some breeds that are known to pant when they're really engaged in strenuous activity, but as a general rule, I recommend assessment with your veterinarian. Anytime you see a cat panting or open mouth breathing, it is often a sign of something respiratory or cardiac. And so, to answer your question, they are going to cool themselves less so by evaporative cooling from breathing and more so from transfer of heat from their bodies. So, they'll lay on cooler surfaces and they've got less surface area. So, it is a little bit easier for them to shed that heat. I think just to summarize, check the weather before you go out for an outdoor activity and make sure it's not going to exceed a threshold that's going to be too much for your pet. Know your pet's abilities and their fitness level, and be able to predict or anticipate what is going to be too much for them. You know, how many throws of a ball is too much? How far of a distance is going to be too much for them? And if it's over 75 degrees, I limit outdoor activities until the sun sets or it's rising and things are cooler. Humidity is going to play a role in that. And then we spoke about ways to try and cool your animals and, you know, allowing them to pant, giving them cool water. And the one thing we didn't discuss is, you know, the one area that you can try to wet down to help them cool off. For dogs in particular, is their little paws. The paws are actually the only site on a dog where they've got merocrine glands. These are, you know, sweat glands. And so they're actually going to sweat a little bit on their little paw pads in between the toes to help
Oh.
them cool off. We can help them by, you know, moistening their paws, and that'll help to cool them down a little bit as well.
Do dogs have sweat glands in their nose?
The merocrine glands are going to be between the toes and on the nose, and that's why, you know, a dog that's exerting itself is going to have, you know, moisture on those little ridges of the nose. And, you know, the rest of their body's covered in these apocrine glands that are mainly going to be producing, you know, like oils, like a kind of like a surfactant to coat the skin. And there's a pheromone component to it also, which is why dogs are always sniffing each other and getting a lot of intel on other dogs just by sniffing their fur and their skin.
I have so many more questions, but I think I'm gonna overwhelm myself. Is this harder than your test that you had to take to become a veterinarian?
Yes, way harder. I'm grateful that they didn't test me like this in vet school. I'll put it that way.
So many summer activities that we want people to be able to enjoy with our pets. Like that's what we want to be able to have the best time ever, whether it's like walking, running, hiking, playing fetch, camping, road trips. I mean, we didn't touch on road trips, which is a whole other category I could ask you about. But just like playing. I mean, it's really about playing and enjoying the sun.
Yeah, we've covered a lot here. I want everybody to stay safe, have fun with your pets, and listen to their bodies. Listen to their bodies and listen to their little cues. Sometimes that is the greatest indicator of where the line should be in terms of stopping an activity or slowing it down. We love you guys. Stay safe, stay cool, have a great summer, and we'll see you next month.
See ya.